Welcome to the Miss Union of Madison. Thank you, Susan Hagstrom, for being our speaker again today. And your title topic, Anti-Intellectualism in America, subtitled The War on Science.
Yes, yes. All right. Well, today's White House Office of Science and Technology has, under the current president, 45 staff. The last president had 135. The only officer in the department at the current time has his degree in political science.
It's a science.
And before taking the office, he was the chief of staff for venture capitalist Peter Thiel. And Congress abolished their science advisor office, which was called the Office of Technology Assessment, in September 1995, and now each legislature picks and chooses whatever science they choose, or whatever scientists they want to bring their point. It was abolished during the time of Newt Gingrich's Republican Congress, and Newt Gingrich, even though being quite a technophile, was of the opinion, ideologically, that even picking science, you should do it in the free market fashion. So this is what happened. So why this diminution? I shall, for a definition, take from Chris Mooney's book, The Republican War on Science. He phrases abuse of science as, quote, any attempt to inappropriately undermine, alter, or otherwise interfere with the scientific process or scientific conclusions for political or ideological reasons, unquote. In other words, just saying you don't like the conclusions is one thing. Going in and editing to obscure or change results is another, which has been done. The United States in the 20th century had a long period where science and technology were well respected. President Roosevelt kept up the push to increase science productivity even after the end of World War II. It can be understood why we had science productivity during World War II, just to help with the war effort. Eisenhower continued on this path, and Kennedy was the president to create the White House Office of Science and Technology during his term in office, which still exists today, except now the current president has only 45 staff and one leader of political science. So what happened? Essentially, the development of a methodology to distort or obscure results not to a political or ideological liking. Here are some of the methods I have collected from my reading. One, undermining science itself. A classic example of that is from the anti-evolution creationist speakers. They will deride evolution as just a theory, which pretty much is switching from the general use of the word theory, which means not really much fact to it, from the more rigorously scientifically defined use, which says there is a lot of evidence based behind it. So they are, you know, trying to undermine the science that it is under evolution by just mucking up the definitions of the word theory. And then number two is suppression or altering reports. Reagan stalled a report on acid rain, Bush on climate change, and the most recent, the elimination of anything related to climate change on the EPA website. Oop, I forgot. With these five definitions, I printed out a non-sequitur cartoon that came out today. Maybe I should read it too, but here are several more copies. And this is just the little thing so that you guys can figure out which suppression routines and methodology these guys spoofing. It goes, Danae, the head leader, goes, facts don't lie. Mass shootings are committed entirely by testosterone-infected humans. Therefore, the science of profiling dictates that the stability of all humans infected by testosterone is suspect, and they should be banned from public places until a cure is found. Unless someone can come up with a more realistic solution. Then her father yells, how about banning the weapons that it used in mass shootings? And his other daughter says, she said, realistic, Daddy. and he's spoofing a few of these methodologies these guys use. So the second one, yeah, as I said, there's a suppression or altering of reports. This happens quite a lot. And as you can check, the majority of the stuff I found was under Republican presidents, not under Democratic presidents. Targeting individual scientists. An example I like is endocrinologist Tyrone Hayes' work with atrazine and its effect on the frog population. He published his reports, and automatically it was called a junk scientist, and quote, I love this line, guilty of producing research more akin to a Brothers Grimm fairy tale than science. Yes. Number four is rigging the process. Changing the rules of what data is acceptable for use in making proposals based on science. And we have a current example of that in this week's Tuesday New York Times. You found the article, Narrow Scope for EPA Rules. Would make it severely restrict any research coming out there, because it said, it was basically saying that Scott Pruitt is going to deny any research where confidential data was being used. Which, if you think about HIPAA basically covers this anyway for protection of the confidential data, but the way this is phrased, any confidential data in reports would mean the report would not be acceptable by the EPA. If anybody wants to look at that article, it's under there. And there's an editorial on the Sunday paper about how bad that example of that is. Two. That is a classic example that is happening today. And if you want any more examples, Union of Concerned Scientists put out an article on, well, basically how bad Trump is for science. And here is a timeline of attacks on science from January 5th to July 20th. And everything they consider bad for science. It's on their website. I suggest people look at it. Okay, another method of rigging the process is packing an advisory committee with ideologues. So basically, remember how I was saying that nowadays the political science with a venture capitalist is about the only head of the Department of Science these days. And if you look at the only committee with even science in the word title, it's the Commerce Committee. And they pretty much put science in the title because they had to take NASA include NASA into their committee process. But if you look at the legislation they put out, 99% of it is dealing with helping commerce, not any scientific ideas. And then another technique is defining models as too uncertain, scientific models. This was used by Newt Gingrich and others so that they could say, they basically went and said, empirical data is the only sound data, evidence and data. So any empirical models they used, which is one of the ways they basically prove climate change these days, would not be allowed because the data was too uncertain under the models of what's coming forth. Which it's kind of iffish and stuff like that. Okay, and the other one is errors and misrepresentations. Big one is cite omissions, where they cite only those in favor of whatever they want, and none of them against. So they will quote the one guy who says climate science is not a good idea and ignore the 99% who say it will. And then errors, for example, the Republican War on Science puts out how Bush's claim that he was being a moderate and that he said there's 60 viable stem cells to study from for scientists, whereas that was actually way over classified, and scientists have only 22 lines to work from, which is a greatly diminished amount. And an error of definitions where he didn't pay attention to the scientists he was talking about, and the guys were talking about the derivations and how much work the scientists put into it, but the actual lines and clear-cut things are only 22. Not a very good idea. And then there's climate denier reasons. Our esteemed Ron Johnson is known for three of them. Ron Johnson goes, Middle Ages were an extremely warm period of time. Two, and it wasn't like there was tons of cars on the road. That's our senator. And one of my favorites is, I think it's far more likely that it's just sunspot activity or something just in the geological eons of time where we have changes in the climate. That was said in August 2010. And I absolutely do not believe that the science of man-caused climate change is proven, not by any stretch of the imagination. And if you go on the website, Skeptical Science, they have collected 197 reasons people have given why climate change does not exist. Some of them are a little bit repetitive, but there's still 197 reasons people have given, most of which can be easily proven false. I'll pass that on for people. So they will think of any reason to not say anything related to science. Okay, magnifying uncertainty. The use of uncertainty has been used to stall numerous actions. On the political scene. The current EPA's Clean Power Act, where they're stalling left, right, and forward to try to avoid putting the clean power out. And then a slightly insidious one, where any scientist would agree on the wording, it's called the Data Quality Act, where they basically put together an act where any scientist would agree with the wording. It pretty much says that if you are going to produce a report for a political person to read, the data has to be good. Problem is that anybody can use this act to go and say, your data isn't good enough, go back to the beginning. So among other companies that have gone and used this Data Quality Act are the Sugar Company, when reports come out saying, you know, you should reduce your amount of sugar you eat, and the Salt Company, which came out and produced that when the reports came out that you should reduce the amount of salt you should eat. So that's any company can use it, and several have. And they challenge the data that was used to make the recommendations and then stall action whether it's warranted or not. And then the big one that's very popular with climate change is relying on fringe scientists. As I said before, Newt Gingrich got rid of the Advisory Committee on Science because he felt that politicians should be able to use the free market approach when getting science advice. Problem is, you can basically pick a loony bin. You don't have to pick a scientist who's using good data and scientific process and peer review process and stuff like that. And unfortunately, I mean, not only the right is doing that, the left is also doing that. You can pretty much say the vaccine scares are pretty much on the left side of the political side. And the right side, they do climate test science this way, creationism versus evolution. Ronald Reagan was apparently, according to the Republican War on Science, he would do this because he was a creationist, he would do that for the anti-evolution side. And then dressing up values in scientific closing. The Republicans like using phrases, terminology, and so one of them that can catch your eye if you see them using it, and they do use it, is that you have to have, quote, sound science, unquote. This is their terminology to say anything that isn't what they want is not sound, what they quote, sound science, unquote. And Mooney, in his book, uses the example of the effort to get out the morning after pill for women. It was denied, using the excuse that more data was needed on the effects of the use and usage on teens. Mooney points out that rarely did the FDA differentiate on this with other drugs. So they don't go around differentiating between teens and adults with a whole bunch of other drugs. And no evidence existed to say teens would use the drugs differently than adults. And there wouldn't be any evidence. And so number nine is developing a contrary scientific point. Another example, tobacco industry. It was found out we were hiring scientists to write contrary reports on the harm tobacco causes. So that's another technique they use. That's probably more business than Republicans, though. But okay, and reducing public access to data. As the Trump administration has issued gag orders on EPA and USDA employees, USDA has deleted in the past 6 months public databases on animal welfare records. White House has removed all data from its open portal website, and that's in the last 6 months. And the DOA banned staff from using phrases of climate change and Paris Agreement in any communications, etc. That's also in the last 6 months. So let's just say they've been doing, in the last 6 months, they've been doing a rapid job of making sure the public doesn't have as much data as before. And that also gets in the groups of restricting communication of science, you know, if you can't get it out, you're restricting communication. And creating an environment hostile to open communication between scientists. If you're denied the ability to put your stuff out, you are. So critical thinking is needed, but no one person can completely study all the methods that distort scientific literacy. But I would like to point out that a lot of these methods are very similar to the average cold user reader methods. I'm going to quickly put those down. One, have confidence. Two, make creative use of polls and surveys. Three, set the stage. Four, make no excessive claims. Five, gain their cooperation in advance if possible. Six, use a gimmick. Seven, use your senses. Eight, apply the fishing technique. Where you have a brother? Yes. Or maybe it was your uncle. Be a good listener, dramatize, tell the listener what they want to hear, or flatter. So by remembering these techniques, it can be easier to spot when it's happening. Kennedy put a man in orbit. Was it necessary, or was it for dramatic effect? And I put that as a question because in the book, they have a scientist's report that says it wasn't necessary. And indeed, the scientists wanted non-manned orbits when Kennedy was putting men in orbit. Bush's error on stem cell search, was it a gimmick to appease the non-religious on this issue? And Walker's Wisconsin is open for business, was it a gimmick setting the stage for something else, et cetera, et cetera? Something to think about. All right, let's have some discussion.
Who do you think is the best science organization calling attention to these problems? Would it be the Union of Concerned Scientists?
Well, they are very good, but they are seriously outmanned right now in terms of conservative think tanks. And the big problem with conservative think tanks is the minute anybody sort of recognizes that they're sort of going over the edge, they change their names. So I was researching one group. It used to be called the George C. Marshall Institute, and it is a prime giver of a lot of those excuses for why climate change is not existing. But people started realizing that they were spouting out anything they could think of, whether there was any proof whatsoever to it. So now you have to look under them, under the CO2 Institute. So all that. Maybe they chose that name because CO2. Yeah, maybe if CO2 is actually good for us instead of bad for us. So, I mean, that's just one example of the number of conservative think tanks. If you look at the Heritage Foundation website, they will tackle everything from, well, the one I loved was the Endangered Animals
Species.
Act.
Species.
And they avoided the science for a whole article that said that it was overdue on repealing because it was preventing a whole lot of jobs. So their technique is to almost avoid the scientists and sort of point out to anything that they don't like would improve on jobs right now. That's their technique. But that's still sort of anti-science and avoiding science. That's kind of a mission, should we put it that way. And there's just way, way, way too many conservative think tanks. And so I would recommend the Union of Conservative Scientists. They talk about the abuse of science, but they also have a sort of mild lint to, how shall I phrase this, attacking abuse of scientists. So they will complain up the wazoo, for example, that Trump has not filled any of his positions on his science advisor committee. I mean, he's not bloody likely to, isn't he? No concern for science whatsoever. Well, unless it would get him money, let's put it that way. But, and it's not totally an issue because if you read, even if you just read this Republican War on Science, Bush hired science advisors, but if based on this book, the science advisor, when talking about abortion, for example, he would bend over backwards to support whatever ideology the White House was putting out, to the point that several scientists were really embarrassed for the guy, because he was an actual scientist, but he was supporting his president over the science. Robacher is the name.
And when I had some friends who were in Malawi teaching with the Peace Corps in the late 60s, early 70s, and they said that in their classroom, when they were talking about science, the kids thought that whoever could make the best argument, you know, if they were sort of debating something, if you were the most, put forth the best speech, you won. You know, you were the one that, you know, people then would vote for you to be correct, not, you know, totally irrelevant of the merits or the objective look of what the science was. And I remember at the time thinking, well, how silly. But now we're seeing that same sort of mindset in general. And I just was reading about one physician who thinks that there's a drug that you give if somebody has a blood clot, that if you can give it within the first 3 hours dissolves the blood clot. And there's one, you know, well-known physician who thinks that this is a bad drug because in a very small percentage of cases, and they try to be very careful to distinguish between a blot versus a hemorrhage, but his point is, well, if it's a hemorrhage, it'll make it worse, which of course it will. So he goes around convincing people not to use the drug at all. And he's worked with a lot of young physicians, very articulate guy, who's apparently convinced a lot of new, you know, coming out of school in interns and residents that they shouldn't be using this drug because he can make such an articulate argument. Not looking at, you know, so rather than look at the statistics and the studies and stuff, people listen to this very articulate sort of expert. So the thing that I was hearing about from these high schoolers in Malawi that I thought was so absurd is happening now, and not even in the, you know, with people who are not, you know, thoughtful, well-trained people. It's just the idea of looking at the base research seems to have lost its power.
Well, I mean, if you think that's bad, I mean, the vaccine thing got a great push when that act was...
Right, and the vaccine thing would be an older example of...
That was an actress!
Same phenomenon. Right, and at least in this case, it's a physician. In that case, it wasn't even anybody who had a clue what they were talking about.
You can understand people being suspicious of the drug companies, though.
Yeah.
I mean, they've sold us so many bills of good for such a high price for so long that anytime somebody brings up the slightest, you know, they've got a history of
I'm so not saying the companies aren't complicit.
We shouldn't trust them.
That Data Quality Act, I mean, it's just tailor-made for any company that wants to ignore, you know, I mean, to keep selling whatever is bad.
It does help to look at the actual research and experience behind things, though. So.
Yeah, I mean, in words and terminology, the Data Quality Act seems rather, you know, nice. It's the thing, you know. Most scientists would say, make sure you have the best data before you publish a report.
Sure.
You won't find a scientist who wouldn't object to that sort of statement. It's just the
right
way it's phrased. It's just right for abuse.
Because they're taking all data and throwing it out, basically, until it's 100% proven.
Yeah.
Which
but there's no basis
sort of hard to do.
To say, I mean, there's no basis in the act to really say why anybody can challenge it. So anybody can challenge anything just based on the data, whether they like it or not. I mean, it's
if they're not happy
sort
with the
of a faulty act.
There.
Yeah.
What you were talking about in Malawi makes me think that's forensics, that's debate. You award the prize to
right,
the person
exactly,
who's the better
exactly
debater, not necessarily because they have the best facts.
Exactly.
And it makes me think that our politics is now theater. It's not weighing the person
TV
who knows best.
Yeah.
It's reality TV.
And reality TV. I wanted to ask if this book, talking about the Republicans, does the author predict continued success for this? Because I see that in this society. And you remember the book, what's it called? The Politics of Discontent by the UW professor. She may have spoken here.
Politics of Resentment.
Politics of Resentment, And you mentioned jobs. I mean, for most of the electorate, what they're going to make in their jobs is more important than whether we save the stream down the way.
Yeah.
I see that as the continued progress of U.S. politics for many years to come.
Until things start to totally collapse.
When was Chris Mooney's book published? Was it before Trump was elected?
Yeah.
Bush era, let's see. He covers the Bush era, so it's probably either before Obama or somewhere near there. Let's see. 2005.
So it's what the Republicans were doing well before Trump.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, we get another Republican group in here and look what happens. Balloon. I bought this editorial from the New York Times. It points out that the new census, it has six general racial categories. White, black, Asian, Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islander, American Indian or Alaska Native, and some other race. And it basically points out that Hispanic, Latino or Spanish origin is not on that list. So the new census will have nothing to show how many Hispanics are in the United States.
Yeah, where would you put yourself?
Speaking of, you know, well, I mean,
well,
of altering data, just a soup of sources you need.
You're talking of continental America, maybe you're Native Americans.
You know, I mean, and then, you know, we all know that Bush, I mean, that Trump made his push on that stupid wall idea.
That's interesting.
So he's been started off getting a name by pretty much insulting Hispanic people.
Maybe what we'll have to do to assess a scientist is to take a wallet biopsy and see who is paying for the research.
A wallet biopsy, like that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, not even that works, because sometimes they can get good research out of companies. It's just how the companies react to the research.
Yeah. Well, so they censor the report when it comes out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So basically, you know, assuming that, but I mean, you know, if they're not even collecting good data in the American census.
Yeah. Oh, that's
really interesting. Yeah. I thought they would include a mixed race option for all of the people who are, and that's not.
Well, no, they do have an other race.
Well, other is not.
Some other race.
Is not. Doesn't really say. Does it
ask you to specify if you say other?
It doesn't say that. Apparently, Hispanic, Latino, or Spanish origin is treated as an ethnicity. A question asked separately.
Oh.
Well,
so,
as long as it's in. Because really, it's not a race.
Yeah.
I mean, even though we know race is just a construct to begin with, but I when I think of Hispanic being a race in quotes, I think of, you know, like at the turn of the century, if you were Italian or Irish, it was like being Hispanic now. Well, now those people are all just white.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
They get blended in. You know.
Yeah.
And so 40 years from now, all those people will just be white, basically, or black, or mixed, which isn't in there, or human, right?
Yeah.
But the people who have like a African American parent and a European ethnic parent are asking to have where they don't have to choose.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably some other race category.
But my sort of question about the book again is, does the author see any reason this isn't going to be successful? I don't see a reason that the Republicans are going to lose on this.
No.
I don't see Democrats or scientists or something being successful in the next few years.
One organization that shows up at the time of presidential elections is the Science Debate Group, calling for candidates to debate a series of science questions. Have you read anything about them?
That doesn't seem to have happened so far.
Well, they've had a hard time getting the candidates to agree to, the debate.
Yeah, so they sort of narrowed the thing to make it, trying to make sure they get at least sort of one science-based question in a debate.
Yeah, both parties have got the debate thing so in hand that they wouldn't do anything to actually expose their candidates in a debate. Yeah.
Well, the big thing is a whole glaring issue.
I mean, back when the League of Women Voters used to do it, you could get in, you know, real questions, but now they're... Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's really a big question of critical thinking, and until they get critical thinking going on stronger in this country, it's still going to keep on going.
Speaking of this country, I mean, is this happening... Do they feel so much elsewhere? I mean, in Europe, in Latin America, are they being...
Oh, they have their issues. Russia's well known for going off the wazoo. I haven't studied them nearly as much as the U.S. because, well, I live in the U.S.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean,
It really is a significant difference between, you know, I mean, just if you consider the presidential committee surveys between, you know, you got the Clinton and you got Obama, and then you got Reagan, Bush, and Trump. And it's really a huge difference on how they treat the scientists and the science. I mean, Obama's advisor, let's see, under Obama, they instituted the first science fair. You may or may not have noticed that he had a science fair in the White House. They instituted an expansion on renewable energy, and the Office of Science and Technology also helped a strategic plan to increase what they call STEM education, which is science, technology, engineering sort of thing. He hasn't filled he hasn't filled any of the vacancies so far for Trump.
Yeah, I mean, there's our angle. Those are jobs.
Yeah, but they're government jobs, so those
don't
count.
Government
those
jobs
don't count.
Don't count.
If you listen to Walker, okay. Government guys don't count.
They still get unemployment, push for STEM.
And Obama's Dr. Holdren, he had his training, instead of political science, was aeronautics, astronomics, and physical plasma physics. Which
is different.
Three degrees in...
Some people
didn't understand business at all.
You know,
so... Oh, it seems like the push for STEM education is, especially for girls, is continuing.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting counterbalance.
Well, it depends on what newspaper articles you read, though. The funding for that sort of thing has gone down.
Although
in the budget.
Even here in Wisconsin, that where some of the state colleges are cutting out some of their liberal arts majors and going more to the STEM, because that's where the demand is among the kids.
Well,
because that's where the jobs
are. I'm
going to
say that's where industry is demanding.
Right.
STEM is an acronym. Do you know what it stands for?
Science, technology,
engineering and math.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're a STEM person.
So,
I'm a STEM person.
So all these homeschool people, are they into STEM?
Well, I think it depends on which... Because you've got homeschool that are very conservative, and you've got homeschooling that's very progressive.
Yeah.
So I think it depends on which homeschooling, because both of those groups on kind of both ends are not enamored with the public school for totally different reasons. So it depends. So you can't lump the homeschoolers in one bunch because they're very different.
Yeah.
And regionally around the country, they're also quite different as well.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that one wonders about the comfort of what the Republicans are selling science-wise. Or not communicating, and what the opposite, what the science is showing, makes people very uncomfortable. And you know, if you want to make people feel happy and complacent and comfortable, you don't want to tell them about things like climate change that just by the facts should be making us feel very uncomfortable. And if there's some of that, if you're not trained in science, if you're just more likely, or anybody, even if you are, to go with the person who's telling you stuff as fact, that makes you more comfortable in your current life and situation, as opposed to something that makes you nervous.
Yeah, the one problem with that, though, is, I forget where I was having a discussion the other day, but they were basically going on and on about the ethics and morality and stuff like that, and the human species, if they have the knowledge, are adaptable. Another article in Sunday's New York Times was the decision of in the Houston neighborhood whether to rebuild and risk another flood, or sell your land and go somewhere else, sort of thing. And it's a decision they had to make, and they don't have that much effort. So if they have the information that they need, they are adaptable. And the adaptability I was pointing out was a group that I actually give money to called the International Crane Foundation. And one of the reasons I like them is 90% of the time what they do is they sort of figured out if they go in to an area where the cranes are living and humans are living, they go in and try to figure out another way for the humans to earn a living rather than destroy the crane neighborhood.
Right.
But the only place where I think I haven't seen them have any success is Texas in doing that sort of thing. So it is possible, given enough information and assistance, for human beings to adapt to, I'd say, practically anything.
Given enough information, given the correct information.
Well, there's probably some financial incentive.
Yeah.
Immediate financial incentive. I'm assuming that's what happens with the Crane Foundation. They figure out some way to make people richer by...
Well, they are always asking for money.
Well, a way to make a sustainable living.
Yeah.
Which, if you look at Maslow's hierarchy, you gotta meet all those basic needs for people.
Yeah.
And or have them be able to make
cranes don't figure very high on those needs.
No, for most people it's less ideology and more finance or security.
Yeah.
There's a photograph of the March for Science. I wonder how much effect that really had on our current policymakers.
Probably not much.
No.
Well, I'm quite cynical about the effect on current policymakers, but the headlines for the youth today make me optimistic. Ten years from now, we might actually have an electorate who is...
Right, yes, I love the fact that these kids... And they say if you vote when you're 18, you will vote the rest of your life.
Is that right?
Yeah, statistically. So if you can get your young people to vote, they will. It becomes a lifelong habit.
Or they just could ban testosterone-filled humans.
But yeah, the research on guns is another good example of that.
Oh my God.
Actually banned by Congress.
You can't take the gather the statistics.
Right, because Congress says...
We don't want to research it.
Because we don't want to know the facts, so let's just put our heads in the sand.
Well, because
that's another really good example of
And unfortunately, in places like London, where they let the police start having guns, the evidence is the more guns you have on the field,
the more you're going to use them.
Yeah, and the more criminals will get guns and use them too. I believe when the London police didn't used to have guns, and I believe they do have statistics that basically show that within several years of them having guns, the criminal element also had guns.
More guns,
But they still have far fewer guns than police in Madison, for example.
Well, probably. I have no idea about the police thing and guns.
But the fact is, we don't have good statistics because Congress outlawed gathering them.
The data is one of the issues.
Absolutely stop.
And that's the way to use it. And
that's another. You had nine reasons or something. I forget. So number 10 is just ban research on the issue.
Right. Yeah.
By law.
By law. Yeah. Which that's a good example of.
Yeah, well, even if they don't, I mean...
Exactly.
I mean, this timeline thing shows that they've been cutting down left, right, and forward how much the agencies can give out data.
So maybe even if they have it, they can't share.
March, HHS discontinues the use of lesbian, gay, bisexual, queer, and transgendered individual in two surveys. They're cutting down that.
I don't make a choice.
So they're not giving people, they're not collecting the data in the first place.
All sorts of stuff. By the end of President Trump's first 6 months in office, DOE, DOI, and EPA websites have been altered to remove information about renewable energy and climate change.
What about Wisconsin DNR? Have you read anything on cutbacks and restrictions on science. Fewer scientists work for the DNR now.
Outside of the fact that they fired all the scientists.
Well, they did at the start. I'm hearing positive things now that, what's her name? Pruitt?
Oh, really?
Kathy Stepp.
The secretary, yeah.
Stepp. Pruitt's the federal one. Kathy Stepp went off to the federal feds. She went off to the feds? Yeah.
To the EPA?
Yeah.
Regional office?
Yeah. I'm hearing slightly positive steps in the right direction for the DNR. They're beginning to do more things, but
they have a new secretary.
There's still a gag order. Mm-hmm. For a lot of issues at the state EPA as well.
There was a recent news bit about Wisconsin public employees being one of the lowest in the country in terms of number of public employees per capita.
No, I didn't read that one.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't read that one at all.
That's a radio news story. Of course, that has gotten a lot worse since Walker became governor and
fired everybody.
Discouraged people from continuing. A lot of retirements.
Right. I retired right after he was, right after Act 10.
Well, I'm 54 and I'm crossing my fingers that they won't steal the retirement fund before I retire.
That's what you should.
Or change it.
Yeah, because we have an excellent retirement fund. Which
is the only way I think it survived.
Well, they tried to, was it back in the Doyle administration? Or somebody tried to raid that quite a number of years ago and the Supreme Court said they couldn't. So I keep waiting till they try to do that again. But although we're past the hump where I think they would have done that physically right now. But
it's the trouble with all these wins. You gotta keep winning. I mean, because they keep coming back. They never take no for an answer.
But fortunately, that hasn't come up of late. And we do have really one of the strongest retirement systems in the country.
Yes. And that's probably the only reason it survived so far.
Was there anything in the book about pharmaceutical company advertising on public TV? So all these ads that are banned in many countries, in civilized countries, because they were supposed to go to the doctor, the people who have the training to evaluate these claims, instead they say, ask your doctor about if you have this kind of cancer, et cetera, et cetera.
Aren't we in Australia the only two countries that allow that?
Could be.
Didn't know.
There's one other. I think it might be Australia.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if anybody asked the thing, because they have to say at the end of it all the possible things that you have to be warned about.
All right.
Which they do say at a really fast speed of rate, but they still do say it.
They show their smiling faces, they have the sound in the background.
And you can die from this, and it's always...
No, they say fatal event.
I was going to say, it's always a very passive...
That's an event.
They put it in the passive.
Dangerous event.
Final as well.
People have died, right? Not this killed you. Not this killed you. People have died. But it's always the passive voice.
I've been noticed
that. Well, advertising is always sort of a cushy subject. He didn't mention much in the way of that. This is more ability to keep selling bad stuff and stuff like that. I do read several articles that, you know, I was saying the other day that advertising is kind of, Wizard of Oz kind of nailed it, beware the man behind the curtain. So you buy your thing, you look at the other side and see the ingredients before you actually buy the thing. That sort of stuff. Well, it really is a case of beware the man behind the curtain.
Barbara, you've been reading the New Scientist magazine. Do they cover any of these things in terms of American science attitudes?
Sometimes, yeah.
But that's an international publication?
That's a British.
From the UK?
British, yeah. But they do talk about climate change a lot. And
after Trump pulled out, I mean, I don't doubt the rest of our allies sort of were like, gee, helpful.
Yeah, in science, in climate change, it's interesting that a couple of the cities along the eastern coast, as they're changing their infrastructure, they're talking about and accommodating for rise in sea level. So there being a couple of the mayors of these towns are actually not just talking about, but they're dealing with it as accepting it as a reality and dealing it with the doing infrastructure changes like raising the level of roads and that sort of thing. So at least that's one place where government is in a very practical way addressing the fact that, I mean, because otherwise their cities are, their roads are going to go under.
Well, Florida, I mean, what they lose a couple million dollars every time there's a flood, so.
Yeah, and it was one.
Hopefully they get it up on it.
Yeah, it was Miami, I think, is talking about it, and then one of, trying to think what the other, it was a mid-coast city, I can't remember which one. But the Florida one, when they were talking about it, they said the problem was that they can't just build dikes because the substrate is water permeable. Mm-hmm. So the water comes up through the ground. So you can't just put a seawall in, right,
yeah.
Because it won't make any difference. If the groundwater rises, it just bubbles up through the rock.
Yeah. Well, that's like one of the classical issues why politics and government movement and politics and science will always occasionally run hand in hand, because there's got to be if there's a practical reason to warrant it. They'll pay attention to the science any time.
Right, and so
as you were saying, the monetary issue is
so
another issue.
Yeah, so you begin to see some of on the ground, a few places where they're giving a real New York City, another one after the subways got inundated in that one storm. They're really looking at, okay, what are we going to do? So as much as the federal government at this point is denying climate change, the people who have to actually deal with rising sea levels are starting to take that into account in their planning.
Mm-hmm.
Just because reality is reality.
But unfortunately, there's always an adaptability in the climate change denial. So they were thoroughly denying climate change, and it's more slowly morphing into, yes, there's climate change, but man didn't cause it.
Right.
At least...
And nothing we do can help it, you know.
Yeah.
So.
So, right, so we're not going to stop driving our big cars because it isn't our fault.
Mm-hmm.
But at least some of these people are, you know, like I say, dealing with infrastructure. People who have to deal with infrastructure are actually taking it seriously, no matter who caused it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I wondered too about our cultural, what we watch on television and stuff. When you think about the science that is on TV, the way, if there's no real dramas anymore about scientists, what we have is Sheldon Cooper, who is made a butt of a joke because of his social inadequacies.
I don't know what that is.
The Big Bang Theory.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
Comedy show.
Yeah.
Pretty much what she's saying is if you see a scientist on anything on TV or even in the movies these days, they're either the bad guy or the butt of a joke or they're not normal people.
Socially inept.
And the ones we do have don't talk about things like climate change. I mean, what they have the scientists do when they talk science talk is talking, you know, really obscure physicist language that the man on the street doesn't get. I mean, they don't talk about the everyday, how science affects you, you know, in your everyday life or in your future. they don't talk about anything that really matters with science. I mean,
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if you take a classic look at what your children are getting, you're either going to, like a Disney show, you're either a jock and or a nerd.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe some
the heroes and heroines
like
are the football
National
players
Geographic
and the cheerleaders.
And maybe they're doing a better job of it than the...
Well, even if you look on that on cable, a lot of their shows, they're turning into dramas.
Oh, well, yeah. Or, yeah.
The History Channel has a drama on Vikings.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Yeah, but that's...
The Discovery Channel just put on drama.
Yeah, yeah, it's reality TV. It's a family in Alaska, you know, doing weird things. I mean, okay. But, I mean... Although I will say the one family, I mean, they do talk about, you know, how their climate is changing because it's happening faster for them.
Yeah,
yeah.
The Arctic is warming faster than the rest of the planet,
And they're dealing with it sooner. But
another good organization that's worth mentioning is the Center for Science Education that Eugenie Scott used to lead. Because they're dealing not just with the anti-evolution people now, but also the climate change deniers.
Oh,
so they're working
on that. They've expanded their...
Eugenie Scott was anti-evolution. And a good talker on the subject, too.
Yeah, she's very, very articulate.
But as she was pointing out, that Big Bang Theory show regularly gets 9 to 10 million viewers, whereas...
It's funny.
National
that,
Geographic gets like half a million to a million views at the most.
Yeah.
So, as try as we might, science still doesn't have as quite a glamorous thing.
Well,
because if you really want to go on to it, American Idol apparently has ratings and are up steps of the roof. And that's nothing.
Well, thank you for presenting this topic to us, Susan.
I thought it was interesting.
It was interesting.
It's important.
Okay.
I've been sitting for a while.